Greetings, everyone. Are you ready for an accelerated course in higher consciousness? This is how our global village will get ahead of the accelerated rate of change we are now seeing in the world. It won't be with the same consciousness that created the problems we see. It will be with a new consciousness that is now evolving with the angels of our better nature. Welcome to Cosmic Love. Have you ever considered what will happen when the language of cosmic love becomes common sense with a common language? Are you aware that this love language is, in fact, the learning process, the creative process, and the processes of consciousness at the quintessential foundation of self-governance? Think about that. Such a language of consciousness has the potential to involve and evolve our individual and collective consciousness. This is what cosmic love is all about, higher conscience. Give yourself a checkup from the neck up. What do you think will happen to your world and the world at large as we become more conscious of how we are conscious, both individually and collectively? I'll give you a big hint. Take a good look at the worldwide web of consciousness that the internet has created. Consider this new net reality for what it truly is. A global revolution in higher consciousness. The instant, everywhere, interactive internet has eliminated space and time. We're all connected in a global village now. All knowledge is at your fingertips. Knowledge power as never before known to humanity. But where's the cosmic love, you may ask? There's a new net reality shaping the consciousness of humanity. Freedom to know better and the opportunity to do better has far outpaced the ability of our core institutions to keep up with the revolutionary capabilities for all humanity. That's what the internet represents, the evolving consciousness of humanity, the collective consciousness of humanity, and the collective future of humanity. That's where cosmic love comes in. Any good metaphysician with his finger on the pulse of humanity could tell you that. If you step out of the box of contemporary groupthink and if you become an objective observer of the evolutionary ascent of net reality caused by the internet, you will not only see a huge wave of change coming, but also the nature of that change and the role that cosmic love will play in change events. There is a natural evolutionary path to these changes. Cosmic love is a blueprint for that change. It always has been. But humanity is just beginning to grasp the multidimensional consciousness required to navigate the vast, uncharted realm of inner space, the internet, at the heart of the internet. This is the new global village consciousness that is defining the collective conscience of humanity. Let's get real. Net reality is what we make it. Where do you think it's going? How do you think we'll get through the birth pangs of a new world being born? Are you ready for the next big thing in the computer internet revolution? Would you agree that the best way to predict the future is to create it? Cosmic love is the answer to these questions. All I ask is that you listen and learn. See how you can catch the biggest wave of opportunity in history. I'll explain how you can ride that wave for phenomenal win-win benefits for yourself and all humanity. Those hearing this are obviously computer literate, so connect the dots. Get a grip on the net reality of global connection with the benefits of cosmic love. Someone has to do it. May it begin with us, united sovereigns, in a united state of cosmic love. Always victory when we love enough. Keep the faith. Get the vision, embrace the virtue, make the vow, and claim the victory of cosmic love in your world and the world at large.
Greetings, everyone. This is Christopher Rudy with Cosmic Love. Today I have on the show Dr. Natalie Reed, author of Five Steps to a Quantum Life. Those who have gone to the BBS radio page on Cosmic Love have seen an introduction to her and a link to her book. And you can open, if you came onto the show directly, you can open a window in your browser and go to that page. And I'd like to introduce Natalie. Now, are you there, Natalie?
I'm here.
Natalie just got back from a book signing. Was it Barnes & Noble?
Yes.
And I know it's been a hectic day for you. I thought this would be fun anyway, and I'm sure you are pretty comfortable speaking along these lines. You do it a lot these days, I guess.
Absolutely. I'm totally comfortable. I'm talking about it all the time.
Okay. Well, this is one of those subjects, quantum reality, that is one of my favorite, and I'd like to definitely get your perspective on how we can shape our fabric of, you know, our paradigm filters on all that is with this understanding of quantum reality. And what I understand from your book, reading it today, is spiritual practicality.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's a good way to put it, and I that's, yep, here, that's me.
So I'm really interested in these steps, and I've tried to put them in my own frame of reference to an understanding of basic core principles of cosmic law, which I reference as cosmic love. And I noticed there is a correspondence there, and it kind of sequences these five steps that you have in the book.
Mm-hmm.
But to begin with, you have a very lucid introduction from your in your book. And how would you, in a brief way, introduce that?
Well, you know, I don't know exactly what I have in my book, but I'll just introduce what. You know, the reason I wrote the book is I wanted people to know this information. I think the general population does not know about quantum physics, and let me just say that quantum physics is the study of movement inside atoms, and atoms are what make up all the molecules that make up everything in our physical world. And the way the little particles, the subatomic particles, move around inside atoms are totally surprising and something we would call magic, because they don't follow any laws that we know. They don't follow the laws of nature the way we think of them. They don't follow time or gravity or any of the laws of nature the way we would perceive them using Newton's laws of motion. And because the way they work is so exciting, I wanted everybody to know that this is how we are actually physically creating our reality. I put that together with how people create the reality using their subconscious mind. And so I'm giving you tools to make changes if you're not happy with the way what you have right now.
Well, I noticed that you have on your webpage, your homepage, a little reference to that. And you mentioned that these mysterious ways that these subatomic particles work is that they actually respond to people who study them.
Yes.
And that you can't observe anything in the subatomic world without changing it, proving that there are no observers in life, only participants. And that really grabbed me.
Exactly.
The fact that at a level far smaller than what, you know, the atomic particles themselves, there's a whole world going on that's interactive with our consciousness.
That's exactly right. And what's really cool is that there is one particular experiment that's been created a number of times over many years. And what happens is if you don't observe it, and the scientists have ways to observe or not observe. Nobody has seen a subatomic particle or even an atom, but they have ways of, they actually account for them mathematically, which I don't go anywhere near because
uh-huh.
That involves math.
And they can observe the results.
They observe the results, and they validate it with mathematics, which that part doesn't even interest me, so
yeah.
I don't go there. But there's no math in my book. I want to point that out. But what happens is if you don't observe this one particular experiment, what is shown is that the subatomic particles behave like invisible waves of energy, like sound. You know, sound is an invisible wave of energy.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you do observe that very same experiment, if you observe as it's happening, those waves of energy become a piece of something. They become particles, a particle of something, substance, of matter. And what that means is reality is observed. When we don't look at it, things are just invisible waves of energy, and when we do look at it or focus on it, is what I like to call it, it becomes something real. And you can use that knowledge to create something real in your life, like a new job or a new car or something, or a new relationship, whatever.
Then there's something about this communication that goes on at that subatomic level.
Yes, you're changing things at the subatomic level with your own subconscious mind, with your own subconscious thoughts and feelings, choices and decisions and attitudes and beliefs. You create out of nothing, out of the waves of energy, you create something that will be real.
Well, it makes sense to me that if these subatomic particles are interacting with our conscience and that are affected by it, and that it affects matter, I mean, it's the spirit that matters.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense to me that it's obviously affecting the energetics of our DNA, which is a transceiver that controls the whole body.
Mm-hmm.
But they also know that DNA is a transceiver as a whole body. It's like the brain is a whole holographic energy matrix, you know, beyond the cells. That there's
just to back up a second, having the fact that it's holographic means that one little piece can create the entire whole.
Can create the whole.
Right.
So there's an interrelationship between the parts and the whole.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, do you have a little reference to that holographic concept?
I do talk about that, but the bulk of the book is really to help people understand how matter is created in our world and how they can make any change they want.
How they can make a difference.
Right. So that I wanted everybody to have a wonderful, happy life. And I thought if they knew how to do this, everyone's already doing this right now. They just don't realize they're doing it. So I wanted them to see what they're doing and then see how they can change it if they're not happy with the result.
Well, I'm really intrigued because I can see a connection between something that's simple in your book and something that's really profound, like a unified field theory of all that is. And you've stepped it down, you know, with these five steps in a very practical, do-it-yourself way that I really love that. You know, it's
thank
like,
you.
You know.
I wanted it, just anybody. I wrote it so that anybody with high school education could understand it and could, I wanted to include everyone to be able to make changes.
And your first step is responsibility.
Right. You can't do anything. If you're not responsible, if you don't own something, you can't make any changes to it. If it's not yours, you know, if it's the Empire State Building, you can't go in and start remodeling. They're not going to let you. You know, it's not your building. If you do own it, though, so if the owner of the Empire State Building is listening, you can make any kind of remodeling you want because it's your building. But if you don't own it, you can't change it. So the first step is really owning that this is my reality, that for whatever reason and however I did it, I've somehow ended up here. And now I need to own this so that if I own it, I can change it.
Well, that's kind of my theme with Cosmic Love, with a lot of my shows. I get into net reality as owning this phenomena with the instant everywhere interactive internet. You know, how we're all connected now and time and space has been removed. And I know there's a synchronicity with ESP as effective sensory perception when you are open to it, believe it, own it, or, you know, have a sense of being responsible for connecting now in a global village, you know, and that there's
there's a quantum correlation with ESP, the way you're saying it and the way that most people think of it is called superposition, and it has to do with they did experiments and they could prove that if they observe one little subatomic particle, there's a reaction with a different one where there's no time or way for it to communicate, but it knows.
But it knows.
It's called superposition. I describe it more succinctly in the book. But it's it's very cool, and it's the same kind of thing, you know, as, you know, when you just know something happened to somebody you're close to in another area, suddenly you think, uh-oh, something's wrong. I mean, you just, one of those things like you're talking about where you're just connected with other people.
So there's this quantum field of potentiality that is so far beyond our limited sense. And, of course, your book is dealing with, you know, for owning your own life, what you can do to practically manifest.
Yeah, I looked at your stuff, Chris, it looks much more abstract than mine and much more
universal
level.
It is.
What I wanted to do was really just do a nuts and bolts kind of thing that people could use, just anybody could grab and get a new job or get a new whatever, or change, heal something or do whatever, just on a very pragmatic, you know, just a practical, as I say, nuts and bolts kind of way.
Yeah, and I love that about your book. It's more of a nurturing of a very basic, simple, practical understanding, more from the perspective of what I would call the divine feminine rather than the universal law language.
Oh, I find that very flattering. Thank you.
Well, I'm working on my divine feminine, but, you know,
good. Well, that's one of my things, so, yeah, thank you. I do have a very strong spiritual practice, and it's evident when you read the book, but it's I've included, there's room for everybody. What I wanted to do was make it available to anybody and everybody.
Now, you've been a practicing psychologist?
Yeah, I call myself a quantum psychologist because I do use the quantum secrets in my practice. So I work with people along the same lines, really, in a way, that I have in the book.
So this kind of came out of you organically after many years of practice and working with many different modalities in psychology?
Exactly, yes. I got my degree, I got my master's, and then 17 years later I got my PhD. And I've just been working with a wide range of different studies and different disciplines, and so everything kind of evolves, and it's all related to each other, and step, you know how it happens where one thing leads you to something else, and you just kind of go along, and then presto, you're there someplace else.
Oh, I don't know. I had cosmic consciousness while I was in architectural engineering at Ohio State, and from there it was just like all of a sudden I saw maps of consciousness, and I went from architecture on the outer to inner space.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't do quite the same thing, but it is an evolution, and while you're in the middle of it, you don't exactly know where you're heading.
Uh-huh.
And then when you get to a place where you just realize, I mean, I got to a moment when I really wanted to write this book. I felt people didn't know this information, and I wanted to share it.
Well, it's definitely, I would consider it 101 on the path of self-mastery. Especially in the way that it integrates, you know, science and spirit.
Thank you.
I love that theme, and it's the last several shows I've been focusing on that.
Well, they are really, to me, they're one and the same, so it makes sense that people are now starting to see it that way. I mean, how can you separate them?
That's the way I look at the divine feminine and the divine masculine.
Yes, it's just all part of the same
thing. It's just part of the same, the yin and the yang of alpha and omega or whatever.
Absolutely.
And I love how it begins with the subject of owning your own life, the responsibility. And I quite often think of the key words I've really been into semantics as far as the ability to respond. In a free will universe is what responsibility really is.
And responding as an adult, not responding as, you know, some issue that kept you in some area, you're still operating in a child. You know, you don't want to do that. As an adult, you don't want to operate like a child. And when you see yourself suddenly feeling that way, you know, whatever happens and it triggers that, you want to take responsibility and deal with that so that you can always be a responsible adult.
Yeah, a mature, not
childlike, and not, you know, not an infant, not an adolescent, but an adult.
Well, this gets into the timeline thing and how everyone processes time differently. And, you know, some people process, a young got into this on the different ways of perceiving time. It's one of my favorite articles, actually, with some of his associates going way back, on how some people perceive time from the past and experiences in their past is how they see the present. And the futurists, or the intuitives, as Jung referred to them, you know, Carl Jung, was people in the present, how they're seeing how everything in the present relates to where they're going in the future. And other people are very here and now oriented, and they, you know.
So which are you, Chris?
I'm an intuitive.
Yeah, okay.
I see the future.
Me too. I always think about the future. But, you know, when you mention time, I don't know if you noticed it in the book, but in the quantum, time doesn't exist the way we know it at all. And the little subatomic particles move backwards and forwards in time all the time.
I saw that. And I call that the infinite and the eternal here and now.
Exactly. Well, and what happens is your listeners will be interested to hear this, that here on Earth, if there's an experiment that ends in an explosion, like there's combustible materials and they explode, you can't go back to the combustible materials after the explosion, but in the quantum you can.
Interesting.
You could end up with an explosion, then you could go back. The next thing, it would go backwards, and they would be unexploded and wouldn't have connected. It's wild. Time doesn't exist the way we think of it at all.
Well, a good example of that, it's one of my favorite books, is a book called Future Memory. And future memory, as an intuitive, you know, as a futurist or someone that can see how things can be and dwells on that and then manifests in that regard, it's someone that's had several near-death experiences. And people apparently that have had near-death experiences, the veil gets kind of thin for them. And especially if they're an intuitive,
Well, I had one, so let's hear what you...
Well, I've had a couple myself.
Oh, okay. Well, I definitely had one, so I'm interested. My ears are perking up to see what you're going to say.
Well, there's as the veil thins, depending on what your archetype is,
mm-hmm.
You know, what, and everyone, according to Jung, tends to see from one dominant archetype, and their minor may be either side of that archetype. But in the book, Future Memory, she gives many accounts of people that actually saw things happening,
mm-hmm.
That were just inexplicable. She gives many accounts of different people that knew something was going to happen, but very specific things, dreams or just a specific knowing that something was going to happen. Jung refers to it as synchronicity sometimes.
Right.
Yeah.
It's that superposition that I was talking about.
There you go.
Yeah.
And the amazing thing about that is that it definitely jumps the timeline.
Absolutely.
And in the same regard, I guess there's these other gifts of that nonlinear spirit, non-locality, and you have you reference that in your book also.
Yeah.
But going back to taking responsibility, it's like owning, what would you call it, owning the moment?
Owning you, I think it's more. It's more you're owning your reality, owning that, okay, I got here and I put myself here somehow. I wasn't aware that I was doing it, but I do acknowledge this is me, and therefore I can change it.
So,
and that's the whole point, so you can change it. It's not to blame
right.
yourself or anything else. It's
so,
just so you can do something with it.
So we create our reality.
Yeah.
I sometimes use the expression that we are what we believe, we become what we believe, we are what we think, we become what we thought, we are what we feel, we become what we felt, we are what we do, we become what we did. And that habit is how we create it. And, of course, going back and recreating it is sometimes what I call a life review. And you have a good process in your book, and you go through that, of how you basically, what I would call doing a life review.
You want to look at how you got here. You know, if you're looking from a responsible place to say, okay, I put myself here, then you want to go back and go, well, what did I do? How did I exactly do this? Although you don't have to go back, and I want to stress to people, it's not an exercise where you have to sit down and for weeks and months think about everything that happened in your past, but, you know, just the highlights. I mean, it's like, okay, I got here because I decided to move or whatever. You know, some just the kind of the highlights of, yeah, I made some choices, and now in retrospect, maybe I wouldn't have made those or whatever. But you want to own that you did it.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't just suddenly end up living where you're living as, you know, willy-nilly accident somehow, that you made that choice. And it seemed like a good idea at the time or whatever.
And if you do what you've always done, you get what you've always got.
Exactly. So that's what I want to show people. Here's what you've been doing all along and you weren't aware of it, and here's what you can do to change it. So next time, it can be different.
Oh, that's what your process goes through in your book, your five steps.
Yes.
And your second process, it's beginning the process, how to process your... You have meditation as a process.
I give a bunch of... I have a number of different exercises. Some are using meditation. Some are things you can do in just the physical world, or some writing exercise. You know, I have a variety of things because not everybody resonates with each thing.
Right. I call it becoming conscious of how you're conscious.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know what works for you. And I also tell... I had a man come up to me last night at a signing and wanted to ask if during meditation, when he's focused on something, if his mind wanders, will that be a problem? And I said, no. It's about your intention. You're sitting down to meditate to create something. And, you know, the mind is very, it multitasks. And so, you're focusing on this new job you want. And another part of your mind, you're thinking, tomorrow I'm going to wear my jeans and I'm going to pick up my car. You know, it's okay. I just wanted to let everyone know. That's okay. Your mind can do whatever. You just want to focus on what you're trying to create.
And we go through, you know, how stilling the mind and how to still the mind. And
but also for people who can't still it,
right?
People, for example, who have Gemini rising,
yeah.
their mind
I can
wanders.
Relate to that.
Yeah, I knew you could. Their mind wanders from thing to thing to thing.
Yeah.
And that's okay in meditation. There's no rules.
Yeah.
It's really your intention is what's important more than anything else.
The intention is, you know, pay attention with pure attention for the ascension.
That sounds good.
Well, that process, you know, becoming conscious of how we're conscious, that, you know, it's almost requires, and this is, you know, when you're hot, you're hot, and when you're not, but it's difficult when you're in what I call beta consciousness, or, you know, when you're in activity. Obviously, it's more difficult than when you're in alpha. Say, when you're just waking up or before you fall off to sleep, you know,
mm-hmm.
there's more of a meditative process. And, of course, ideally, a person can sit down, be still, and create that. But the process...
But, again, you don't have to be so perfectly still that... I mean, you can do this in
right.
three minutes in the restroom. It doesn't require... You know, you to have the incense burning in the room, darkened, and, you know, I mean, that's good to do when you can control it. But if you need to, you can just run into a coat closet and just get quiet for a moment and just get your focus really clear about what you want. And that'll work just as well, too.
Well, and I know a lot of people who are more, you know, there's different perceptual modes that everyone has. Some are tactile and some are left, some are visual and some are auditory.
Mm-hmm.
That for myself, I notice that when I'm doing something else, sometimes I can meditate. When I'm doing something with my hands, it's very simple, like clipping my fingers or something. I can be thinking about something and, you know, entirely separate, and it actually aids the process. I guess that's why seers used to use crystal balls.
Well, yeah, and you're right. You're right. What you can do, you can, if you're doing something that's repetitive and mindless.
Yeah.
Know, painting fingernails or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, it's a good time to be thinking, and you can, you know, you can do this anywhere, anytime. So I do want to stress that it isn't about, you know, complete silence, and you have the cone of silence around you, and you have, you know, as I say, the incense burning and that, all that stuff. You don't need any of that. You just, the most important thing is to be really clear with your focus, and you can even do it with your eyes open. You just be real clear.
Clear with yourself.
Yeah.
Well, I've got into the kind of the what I call the physics of consciousness with equations like, we've all heard the expression E equals MC squared, And if you take, you know, of course, C is the symbol for light, and as you approach the speed of light, you know, C squared,
right, that's
all
the
time
constant.
And space becomes relative. Well, if you take C as consciousness, and you become as you become conscious of how you're conscious, all time and space again becomes relative to where you go with your consciousness. And the conversion of energy and matter, you know, E and M, I sometimes say it's all a matter of mind over matter, or the spirit that matters. And spirit is consciousness, or, you know, the light of consciousness.
Well, I agree with you that spirit matters, and I believe that spirit matters more than anything else. So to me, that's about the means. The way you do something is more important than the result. And the ends do not justify the means whatsoever, and it's the means that are important. You know, there's ways to get money, for example, that are illegal, and
right.
It would hurt other people. Well, we don't do those. Because, yeah, you could hit somebody over the head with something and take their money, but you don't want money that way. You want to do it in a beautiful, positive way, and you don't want to hurt anybody.
So there's a moral imperative to cosmic law.
I absolutely think that, you know, it really, spirit is about how you go about doing things. And I think that's, to me, that's everything. And you want, for me, I want to do everything in the most loving way I can. And I don't always succeed because people aren't perfect, but that's my goal, that's my everyday wish, and I hope, you know, for everybody that could be something that they could, reach for, not necessarily attain, but, I mean, certainly you want to have a goal.
Yeah. Well, that's the goal of cosmic love.
Absolutely. Absolutely, just because we, you know, we're all part of something larger. And why wouldn't we want to, the larger thing that we're part of is love, and it's really beautiful, and so why would we not want to continue that in our daily life, in every way, to try to be as beautiful about the way we go about things as we can. And as I say, it's not always perfect. The people, you know, you're stuck in traffic or whatever, you don't feel very beautiful. You feel like aggravated, and why am I in traffic and all this stuff? But, you know, on a higher level, you can kind of be okay. Well, whatever.
Well, the most difficult thing in the world is to remain non-attached to all those worldly things.
Exactly, and you know, you can. I mean, it doesn't. And I just want to say this because I know when I would hear people say things like this, I think, oh well, I can't do that all the time. And I just want to say you can't do it all the time. Nobody can. Nobody's perfect, but. You know, the more you do, the more you operate from this level and trusting that, you know, this is going to work out somehow. I don't really see how, but it's going to. The more it does.
Well, I've got into those process, those steps in your book, and I've kind of applied them to the LOVE. You know, that's on the love model, that's
mm-hmm.
in the cosmic love, and it actually follows almost perfectly.
Great.
Oh yeah, it's just amazing.
Good.
The L is like the L linear left brain logic, letter of the law, and of course the law is that we are accountable. There's responsibility there's consequences when you're not living according to, call it the moral imperative or a moral compass or which is
paying attention or just doing it deliberately, right. You're doing the wrong thing that you know is the wrong thing, right.
Right. It is a free will universe.
Right.
There is non-locality, and there is, you know, non-linear things that are all connected to everything else, but there is laws of accountability, responsibility. And to the extent that we're in alignment with the law works for us. And part of being in alignment with the law is knowing what the law is. You know, it's like the law of self-fulfilling prophecy, how we get what we ask for, whether we know it or like it or not. And you go into that as far as the subconscious and how it has an effect on our conscious.
And for example, beliefs, which work like self-fulfilling prophecies, when you have a strong conviction about something, and it could be something like, I can't do math.
Right.
You know, you find you can't do math. So,
that's what I call a BS belief system.
You kind of. Yeah. It's like you just, when you are just convinced that no matter, you know, I'll never be a size 2 or I'll never, you know, then, yeah, you won't.
Well,
that's why. So I think can, so what I do is show people how they can change their beliefs.
Changing the beliefs.
Yeah, because you want to change the belief, you don't want to change your dream. You want to change the belief so that you can have. If you want, if you need to be a size 2 for whatever, or you want to do math, you can change that so you'll be able to.
So processing belief systems, which I refer to as BS in short, processing belief systems is kind of the first step.
It's one of the steps
to
exploring what's in the subconscious. That's right, because you want it to be familiar with what your subconscious has right now. And one easy way is to look at your life, and you can see what you have. That's what you believe. So if you have, you know, if you're a multimillionaire and you live up on a mountain somewhere and you have many vehicles and you have everything at your disposal, then you have a belief that says you do that. And if you don't have that those things, then you might want to look at your beliefs and see what's in there. Because maybe, don't forget that everything in your subconscious mind, everything you've ever been exposed to is in your subconscious mind. So if some kid in first grade told you you would never succeed, that's in there.
Everything's
in there. And while you don't have to go back and try to find all those things, because that would be impossible, you can remember the highlights and you can work on those.
Yeah.
And if there's any doubt, you can just change it. I mean, if you think, something's not right because I'm not succeeding as much as I'd like to, I must have a belief that says I can't quite succeed as much as I want, and so you can change that.
So, and I usually begin with the belief systems, you know, the as a function of how we've been programmed consciously or subconsciously.
Uh-huh.
And the O is like the non-locality or the non-linear. And if the L is the linear, the O, the spherical consciousness that's truly spiritual is the frequency of, as in frequently, of holy compassion. And that's where feeling and is like right brain, which is like audio, and vision is like left brain, which is you know, the structured association, and nonlinear free association is like audio hearing.
So this is part of the non-locality of where everything is connected?
Right.
And I used the word superposition before, but I meant to say non-locality. That's the word. I mean, superposition is something that looks slightly different, and it was non-locality I was talking about.
It's non-locality, right.
Right.
I refer to that as non-linear consciousness versus linear consciousness, and sometimes referred to left and right brain, you know, processing.
And for, in my lingo, non-locality.
Non-locality. Gotcha. Okay. Well, that's that concept of there's unconditional love, which is like, it's like non-locality. It's
mm-hmm.
There's no conditions. And there's conditional love.
Right.
And we all do that. We all have the father principle or we have a patriarchal and a matriarchal or a feminine and a masculine in our left brain, right brain, working through us all the time. And, of course, usually we have one dominant and one recessive. And then there's balance, you know, when, you know, to be really balanced. And that's the third principle in the love model, the V, which is like the synthesis, thesis, antithesis, synthesis. It does the brain switching between the two hemispheres. And actually that, as we process, and of course processing our self-image and processing our self-esteem, you know, how we feel about ourselves is one thing, but how we see ourselves is another thing.
Right, the self-image is very important, because if you don't have a self-image that can hold the dream you have, even if you get it, even if you have a belief that allows you to get it, you won't hold on to it. You'll lose it.
That's right.
So you want to change your self-image as well as the belief.
That's right. And you can feel good about yourself with high self-esteem, but if it's non-linear and you don't set the matrix, so to speak, of who you are to fulfill how you feel, then it's like there can be a disconnect.
That's right.
And so I kind of go through that, the idea of all these ancient and modern maps of consciousness, how they basically cross-reference between our ears. And I love the analogy of how there's as many neurons in the brain as there are stars
mm-hmm.
in the galaxy, in the Milky Way galaxy, and how we are in the universe and the universe is within us, and that there's some kind of energetic
correlation.
Correlation.
Well, it's interesting, too, because the brain is not the same as the mind, and the mind is something completely different, and certainly the subconscious mind isn't in the brain.
Right.
But they're all part of us.
Yeah. And there is definitely a connection, as above, so below,
mm-hmm.
to, personally, I've got into, and a lot of people on this show have talked about astrology, psychology as a function of, there are energetic influences out there that definitely affect, and of course they've done studies on lunatics and lunar cycles,
mm-hmm,
you
mm-hmm.
know, and I know there's definitely a correlation with what's in the universe and what is within us. And I'm really big on astrology, psychology, as far as a tool, you know, one of many tools to basically become aware of and take responsibility for tendencies,
mm-hmm.
because it's not foreordained or etched in stone. It's back to the free will universe, and we have responsibility for what we know.
But when you're looking at why something is happening and why you're creating it this way, you can. That's one of the things that I look at. My particular astrology says I'm not very patient. So when I'm waiting for something, and if I find myself getting stressed about it, that's one of the things that I look at, is thinking, okay, here I am. Back at this patience thing again.
Yeah. Well, I'm continually processing, you know, my own understanding, as everyone does, and
mm-hmm.
looking at my soul contracts as anyone serious about their spiritual evolution would be, and what's the highest and best use of their God-given gifts and talents for more easier and faster as far as light, life, and love.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I really love about your book is that anyone that's, I mean, it's like a review of you know, what it's really beyond the basics, but you've got it simple enough, and you tie in what is becoming prevailing awareness with quantum physics and quantum reality. What the Bleep, you know, that movie and the movie on The Secret really has created a phenomena. And I don't know, do you have a chance to
you know, when I saw What the Bleep, I was actually, I know the movie made $12 million and people really liked it, but for me, I already, first of all, knew about the quantum, so I found the movie, I thought, well, this isn't telling people how they can use it, so I always thought it was a tease. It was like,
yeah.
Okay, you're teasing people, but you're not really telling them. And when I spoke to my sister, she said she and her husband watched it 5 times and loved it, so I thought, gosh, people are really hungry for the information.
Yeah.
So I went to look for a book to send her, and there wasn't one that had what I, you know, what I felt was important, and so I wrote it.
Well, it really is service.
I really wrote the book in many ways for my sister, who, thank goodness, loved it. But
yeah.
But I thought she represents a certain segment of people who are looking for this information, but really aren't going to be able to find how to use this. I mean, the scientists, because the scientists wouldn't necessarily agree with what I'm saying, mostly because, or 99.44%, the reason is, I can't prove I'm correct because I can never prove the content of any thought.
Yeah.
Even if I write it down ahead of time, that doesn't prove that is what I was thinking. But I tell people, it's like when you're watching Jeopardy with your friends and you say, I knew that answer, and everybody kind of looks at you, and, you know, some people don't believe. But the thing is, it doesn't matter whether they believe you or not. You know whether you knew the answer or not. And for me, what I say in the book is, it doesn't matter if the scientists can't prove that what we're saying here is accurate. It matters if you get the job. If you get the job and it's exactly what you wanted, do you care that the scientists can't prove it? No. I mean, who cares what the scientists say?
Yeah, let the results be guru.
Well, and really, I mean, if I'm happy in my new job, do I care that I can't prove it to the scientists? No, I'm just going to work and I'm loving my job. I don't care if the scientists say, well, you can't prove that. It doesn't matter.
Well, there is a point where when you objectify a process that's been subjective, and whether it's the learning process or the creative process or the processes of consciousness, as you become more conscious of how you're conscious, the flow of the creator's energy, the creative energy, through any system acts to organize that system. And what you've done in your book is exactly that. You've basically, practically, simply gone through a process that focuses on the creative learning process, and how we create, basically how we create.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, for me, I love that subject anyway, and it's what I've been trying to do with geometrically ordered divinity.
Well, you know, thank you for your nice comments, and I think one of the things that people need to remember is that it's always going to look like a coincidence. You're never going to be able to prove it. That's not so important. I mean, if you're living a happy, wonderful life, you don't have to prove anything. You can just enjoy yourself. But it will to other people, and even when you tell people things that happen, it sounds like a coincidence. I have an incident that happened to me. I use these techniques all the time, and I was asked the other day, what's the most dramatic example I have? And, oh, my gosh, I couldn't even go there because I've done this hundreds of times, so I'd have to stop and spend, you know, half an hour thinking, going, sifting through to see which one was most dramatic. So I just told him a recent one that I can share with you, which is that a few months ago, my foot was hurting. I had it x-rayed, and it turned out that I had a break in my foot from a screw that was in there from years before. I had surgery years before. The screw had broken, and it created a break in my foot, in the bone. And when bone is broken later, it doesn't heal. It was already healed, so it thinks it's already fixed, and you have to put on a device, a stimulator, electronically to stimulate it to grow, to heal. And, of course, surprise, surprise, my insurance company didn't cover that. It was $1,800.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I thought, oh. And right away, see, I use these techniques all the time, and right away I said, no. I'm not spending $1,800 on something I will never even be able to use again. I mean, it's just going to bring me up to normal. It's not worth my money. And what I did was visualize that my bone was healed. I didn't think about how I would get there. I just kept seeing my bone healed. And within, I think it was about 4 days, I visited a friend, and I was wearing this convalescent boot, and she said, what's going on with your foot? And I told her, and she said, oh, I have one of those devices. I had it before, and, you know, I don't need it anymore. You can have mine.
Did it help?
It healed my foot.
The that device did?
It was totally solved the problem.
Really?
And it was free.
Well, I got a steel pit in my ankle, too, but it hasn't been giving me any problems yet.
Well, don't wear this particular pair. I think it was a particular pair of shoes that had a steel plate in it that broke that screw. But anyway, I mean, the whole thing was that immediately, I mean, now to someone else, they would say, oh, what a coincidence, but I know it wasn't a coincidence. It's been like the, 2,000th time that happened to me where I decided, no, I'm not. That is not going to be the way I go, because that way is not an elegant way. Elegant in the scientific term of the least amount of energy for the greatest result. Well, that wouldn't be elegant to spend $1,800 on this device. It was much more elegant to have my friend give me one.
Yeah. Well, I'm really big on miracles like that.
Exactly.
I mean, they're little miracles, but I've experienced them that are just so off the chart. I mean, just so off the chart. I mean, let me give you a real quick one. I was up at up in the mountains, trout fishing, in this beautiful mountain lake in this wilderness area with my sons, and I was just a real meditative. It was one of those moody mornings when the clouds were right down the lake and it was raining. It was misty, and I gave this. I wanted to. There was a bunch of teenagers or youth, 20-something, that came up with my two sons, and there was, I mean, about seven of them, and they were like so much into what I call the worldly world, you know, and
mm-hmm.
just could not hardly get into. I mean, they had their iPods and all, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I said that there was something I could show. I was just in that. I'd gone down early while they were all sleeping, you know, and that there's something to the lake to fish. There was something I could, and I gave this prayer, just the spirit, that if there was something that they could, that I could show them. Anyway, it was starting to rain, and I was going to go back to get my jacket when I heard something plop across the lake, and this bird had flopped into the lake and picked up a trout and was flying across the middle of the lake, and a eagle came across from the other side to get the fish, and the other bird wasn't an eagle, it was an osprey, flew over in my direction, and the eagle swooped at it and dropped the fish right at my feet. And I picked up the fish, and it was one of the biggest trout that, you know, these were all cutthroat trout, but it was one of the biggest ones we'd seen since we'd been up there. And my son saw this, and of course, it just happened that I was also praying for a fish that I could bring back with me at the time. But to have a fish drop from heaven like that in answer to a prayer.
Well, I'm glad you told that story, Chris, because I think for people to realize that when you hear a story like that, it's not the same as when you actually experience it, because when you experience it, you really have the experience that this was a gift, and you can feel it.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You can just feel that this is a gift. And when you tell the story, people can be, ooh and ah, or roll their eyes or whatever they think, but they cannot really recreate. You can't recreate the experience.
No, that's true. It just
knowing.
Doesn't
it's
do it.
Really knowing. And
do it justice.
Yeah, I mean, I have empathy, and I can feel what that would be like to have, oh my gosh, right in front of me, right from the sky. And, even to have my friend hand me the thing, I mean, it's just very cool. I knew it was a gift. I mean, I knew when I got the device from my friend, it was a gift. And when you feel that, it's hard to describe. You can't really recreate it for anybody else. Your listeners know what we're talking about. They've all had experiences like that.
Oh,
this as well.
Everyone's had experiences like that.
Exactly. And the more you have those and the more you're grateful for them, the more they happen.
Yeah, and I found it's almost sacrilegious to talk about my experience when I had cosmic consciousness and what happened. You know, it doesn't compute. You know, it's like, what's cosmic? You know, it doesn't convey, or it doesn't. And it was, but it's a very personal.
Experience. And I think we all have some experiences that are just beyond description, but we can all relate to, how beautiful that is.
Yeah. Well, one thing for sure is that going through the processes in your book, it was one of the best examples of what sometimes they say in the mysteries of God, that you can't tell someone something they don't already know on some level.
Mm-hmm.
There was a resonance there.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you.
Yeah,
that's
it was
a
real,
nice
and, the, and the sequence was really nice. I mean, there was a sequence of persuasion that it's like it goes from aha to aha to aha. I mean, and of course, it requires a receptivity to what I call core fundamentals of cosmic law, or the first principles of the common sense that's uncommon.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to think of it as, it's becoming more common, and I really believe that what's going.
So.
Pardon?
I hope it is. Yes.
Oh, there's definitely a big shift going on.
Of course.
And there's a, and I think it's like a guidebook in a sense for, it's like Cosmic Law 101. And at the same time, you've got some really good examples of science from references to the hologram and holographic principles of consciousness to the whole model of quantum physics as a metaphor for quantum consciousness is I think a really for our age, where this ocean of vibrational actuality that we subjugate as reality, it's becoming, with movies like The Secret and What the Bleep We Know, it's really becoming a phenomena.
Well, I wanted people to know. Some people want to know the really where did I get this idea? And if they see the science, I thought it might help people. They could see, well, here's how it works scientifically, and so now it makes sense.
Yeah.
Versus just saying, oh, you should try this, and not giving them the science behind it. That's why I wanted to put the science there, so people and other people don't care about the science, that's fine. But if there's some that might, and I want to give it to them.
Well, it works really well. I mean, I love the subject, for me, it's like an affirmation or a confirmation that increases my determination.
Well, you know, thank you for your nice things, and I think for people, you know, I wanted it for people who are somewhat familiar, it won't be, you know, maybe everything isn't so startling, but for people who aren't familiar, I wanted it to be palatable and something they could bite off and chew and that they could work with and not be intimidated by, and so that's part of the reason for the science. It's kind of just not so airy-fairy, way in the sky, cosmic stuff. It's just now, you know, here and now, and okay, I do this.
Well, if you're going to sum it up, what would you really like people to get out of your book?
The biggest thing is just that if you're not happy with what you have, you can change it, and I want everybody to know you can make a huge difference in your life, and you can change things and make them much better, not only for yourself and your loved ones, but for the world.
Oh, I love that. Dr. Reed, I'm so grateful.
Thank you.
This has been fun, and perhaps we can do this again sometime.
Absolutely. I'd love to.
All right. Well, appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris.
You're welcome. We'll be in touch.
Okay. Take care.
Thanks so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Well, that wraps up another show for Cosmic Love, so look forward to seeing you in another 2 weeks. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this presentation on Cosmic Love. I hope you have enjoyed receiving this as much as I have enjoyed giving it. There's a new relationship with all humanity that is maturing with the new synchronicity of instant, everywhere, interactive, net reality. Cosmic Love is the heart of this synchronicity. Tools and processes that empower the wisdom of Cosmic Love is the purpose of the Worldwide Love Foundation. The family of man is now making a quantum leap into a new consciousness as never before in history. Our awareness as humankind is expanding, and the Internet reflects that multidimensional expansion of consciousness into new realms of omniscience, omnipresence, and omnipotence in the power of cosmic love. This has huge implications. The more information we have, the greater the need to get it all in order. The more knowledge power we have, the greater the need for the wisdom of cosmic love. That should be common sense. And it's time to make common sense more common. If you agree that the American Revolution was huge for freedom and opportunity in the world, look what's happening to the whole world now. A new connection with cosmic love is positioning the golden rule, law, language for a golden age in our spirit, our minds, our hearts, and the soul of humanity. We're on the threshold of a global revolution that is awakening the angels of our better nature. Let's be honest and reason together. Cosmic love has always been the golden rule law language for every golden age in cosmic history. Some things don't change, only the ability of the human mind to grasp the full implications of the world in which we now live. That has changed with the Internet, and like an adolescent who is not an adult yet, but not a child either, the Internet is now installed, operational, and ready to take our personal and planetary consciousness to the next level. That would be cosmic love, and the foundation principles for this is the Love Model, a universal law language interface for net reality that represents the five-dimensional intelligence that can fulfill a global revolution in higher consciousness. Check it out for yourself. See how it works. Consider the role you can play and how you can benefit. The sooner you get the vision of this cosmic love thing, the sooner you can profit from a wholly new economy that will transform all our social networks with extraordinary abundance of everything held sacred by free people worldwide. There is a new intelligence that is defining and refining humanity's evolutionary ascent. The higher the intelligence of universal cosmic love, the greater the results. The gateway to higher consciousness is, in fact, the language of consciousness. the five-dimensional intelligence that cosmic love frames in form and frequency, as in frequently. Once you get it, how the Holy Spirit of love and action can heal our individual and collective conscience, it will become self-evident how cosmic love can nurture and culture the net reality that brings a Holy Spirit to the collective consciousness of humanity. Love heals all, always has, always will. The more cosmic and universal the vision of love, the greater the results. Welcome to the opportunity. It's time to link the light workers who are love makers. The internet now provides this opportunity for extraordinary synchronicity as will empower wisdom with cosmic love. Someone had to do it. Now you can. Network for the net worth of this new net reality. You have the vision now before you. What you do with it can change your world and the world at large. We are all co-creators in the cosmic scheme of cosmic love. The great spirit of great love is the great opportunity that genuine freedom gives all of us. Heaven knows that there is nothing more valuable than the vision of cosmic love that has found its time. Experience the Worldwide Love Foundation in your consciousness, being, and world. Care enough to share this vision of great opportunity. Step into the circle of global connection as you center and connect with the five-dimensional intelligence of cosmic love that provides...